Hello, this is the podcast episode with Wendy Wood. If you don't speak Dutch, just skip this Dutch introduction of about 30 seconds. Hallo en welkom bij aflevering 235 van de Anonymous Show. Waar je leert van ondernemers en ondernemende mensen die bijzondere resultaten bereiken, hoe ze hier gekomen zijn, wat ze doen, de strategie en hoe ze klanten krijgen. Mijn naam is Enno Hanning en ik deel mijn opgedane kennis, ervaringen en expertise met jou. Ik coach ondernemers die kennis leveren aan bedrijven om beslissingen te nemen die hun eigen belang zijn, zodat ze sneller bereiken wat ze willen, terwijl ze meer vrijheid voor zichzelf creëren. Today we have a conversation with Wendy Wood. Wendy is professor of psychology and business at the University of Southern California and distinguished visiting professor at INSEAD Business School in Paris. She is a behavioral scientist who has spent the last 30 years studying our habits, what they are, how they are formed, and how they are changed. She has published over 100 articles in the top journals in the field, and her work has been widely cited in scientific literature as well as appearing in news outlets such as the Washington Post, New York Times, and LA Times. It was an honor to speak with Wendy and learn more about habits, the good ones and the bad ones. Her book, Good Habits, Bad Habits, gave me the best insights on habits and willpower. It helped me to really understand that willpower will not help you to continue with a new habit. Lots of what you and I do are habits, things that we do without thinking about it. Habits are very valuable because they save our brain energy. And this helps us to make better decisions at times where we need to think. If you want to learn more about sticking with good habits and changing bad habits, then you want to listen to this episode. Enjoy the insights with Wendy. Let's get started.
Welkom in de Erno Hanning Show. De podcast waarin je leert over de beslissingen om te groeien als ondernemer met je bedrijf. Luister naar de persoonlijke verhalen van succesvolle ondernemers en ondernemende mensen. Dan nu jouw business coach Erno Hanning.
Today I have, for the first time in my podcast, I have a professor, Professor Wendy Wood. Welcome, Wendy, in the podcast.
Oh, lovely to be here.
And after some technical hiccups, I'm just saying this again to you because I love your book.
Oh, thank you.
For me, it's like some really good insights. No, not really good. The best insights that I got last year about how habits work and why it's important. So that's why I also, you know, connected with you and see if we could do this podcast, because I think that I want to share your book and the ideas and the research with as many people as I can.
Thank you. That's the whole idea behind science. I have been working in this area, doing research on habit formation and habit change for about 30 years. And that's what led me to write this book. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there on habits. And in a way, it's understandable because habits are part of the unconscious. So you can't introspect or observe your behavior or reason about how to form habits and how to change them. They're really not part of our conscious awareness of ourselves. That's why research and science is so important in helping us understand what our habits are and how to change them.
And you say there's some misunderstandings of habits. What is a typical misunderstanding?
Oh, there's many out there. One popular one is that if you can identify a habit, then you can just substitute a new behavior for an old one. So say you want to eat cookies at a certain time of day, find something else to do that's rewarding and you can just substitute it, like going and hanging out with friends at that time. But habits don't work that way. Once you've formed a habit, the behavior, that specific behavior, keeps coming to mind. It comes to mind automatically without you even wanting it to when you're in the same circumstance as in the past. So that's what makes habits so hard to change. When you practice a behavior, oh, please go on.
Is it because you mentioned that the time when you eat a cookie that you replace it with, that you do something different, is the time then not important?
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, at that time, you'll start thinking about cookies. Even if you're doing something else, you'll start thinking about what your typical habit is at that time of day in that location. That's the nature of habits. They just come to mind automatically, whether we want them to or not.
But when you have good habits, you kind of celebrate them because you see them, you acknowledge them, and you say, "Oh, I have this great habit that is really good for me." But most of the bad habits, it takes a long time before you are actually aware that it's a bad habit of yours.
Yes, that's a great point. For habits, good habits and bad ones are really the same. It's the same learning mechanism. We identify them as good or bad because they're consistent with our goals. Those are our good habits, or they're inconsistent. They're in conflict with our goals, and those are our bad habits. But that's just the label we give to them. And we tend to take our good habits for granted. So, you know, if you were making decisions and being thoughtful, you'd probably do your good habits anyway. So we don't think much about them. We tend to notice our bad habits much more because the bad, the unwanted response keeps coming to mind, even if we've made a decision to do something else.
One of the bad habits that I really hate for myself is, for me, the feeling is that in the weekend, it is okay to eat some chips and or, you know, some cookies, some nuts, some chocolate. It's not okay. It has to happen. That's what it is. So once my dinner is finished, I kind of automatically go to the drawer in our kitchen where this stuff is, and I find something and I start eating.
Well, I would say maybe you enjoy that. So it may not be that much of a bad habit. You look like somebody who's in pretty good shape. eating chips or eating chocolate just habitually probably isn't all that enjoyable. You do it a few times. The first few times you do something, you are paying attention to what you're doing and you're experiencing it. You do it repeatedly over and over, and it becomes less emotionally enjoyable. You don't have the same experience. We do what is called habituating to it so that we don't experience the pleasure as extremely. And if you continue to do it, then it becomes a habit that is just activated automatically, without you really making a decision. Tonight, I want chocolate. Or tonight, I'm still hungry and I'd like something salty like chips. So habits, this is the nature of habits, they tend to perpetuate and we don't experience them that extremely. Our experience tends to sort of subside over time.
Is it, we don't eat out a lot in our area, and also in our home. So is it, because dinner every night, it sounds also like a habit. That's something you do. You cook your dinner and you eat dinner at the same time. But when you go out for dinner, it's completely different. You pay more attention, you dress differently, you talk more to people that you're with dinner with, and you enjoy the food more. Is that something similar?
That's exactly a description of doing something that is more thoughtful instead of following your typical habit. My guess is that when you eat at home, at least if you're like me, when you eat at home, you tend to eat at the same times of day. You tend to eat pretty much the same things, and you do it in the same location. So over time, you're just not paying that much attention to it. In fact, there's good data that people eat pretty much the same thing for breakfast, no matter how much they ate for dinner the night before. And what that means is we're eating the same thing for breakfast when we're still slightly full from dinner the night before, or when we're really hungry because we didn't have much dinner the night before. We tend to eat on a very habitual and pattern. All of us do. And for some of us, that's a reasonably healthy pattern. For others, it's not so healthy.
And I like also the research where, let's see, you talked about it, that when they increase the amount of food that was on the plate, you're always going to eat about the same percentage of the food that was on the plate. So when there was more on the plate, you eat more.
Yeah, there have been studies that have actually altered how much people were served in restaurants. And if you go someplace regularly, this was done in an office cafeteria. If you go someplace regularly, you're not noticing a whole lot what you eat. You just eat sort of out of habit. And in one study, they added half as much again food. So 1.5 times the calories to a lunch and served it. And people still ate about 80% of the food on the plate. And they did so, it's a great demonstration, because they did so out of habit, and they didn't report feeling any more full, because we're not paying attention most of the time when we eat in a habitual sort of routine way.
Yeah, I was talking to an entrepreneur about this book and about habits. And she is in the health industry. So she's like doing massages, but also, you know, therapy, improving people's injuries, but also preventing for getting the injury back. And so in the prevention part, it has to do a lot with habits, how people eat, react, move. And she says, well, I still believe that it is a large part is about making a conscious decision. And I said, well, I think it's important that you read this book, because it's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Our experience is only about our conscious decision-making selves. But in fact, our brains they're not one unitary whole. There's actually multiple parts of our brain that are connected, but work somewhat independently. And this is because our brains didn't evolve all at once in human history. Instead, they evolved over time. With some pieces forming and then receding, we gained and lost lots of different parts of our brains over human history. And the end result is that we have neural circuits for our habits that are somewhat different than our conscious thinking selves. And conscious thought is really important. I mean, it is what makes humans human. But it's very flexible and it shifts. It also takes effort. It involves something that psychologists call executive control. So that's when you're exerting the effort to make a decision and change your behavior. It's effortful, it takes time. And if we were always thinking, making decisions, controlling our behavior in that way, we'd be exhausted. You wouldn't get beyond putting on your shoes in the morning because you'd have to be thinking all the time about what to do, how to do it, where things are. It would be like each day was something new where you had to make decisions. And that's why habits are so useful for us. They take what is constant and stable in our environment, and they allow us to form routines where we don't have to think much about what we're doing. And the research I have done suggests that about 43% of what we do every day is done out of habit. And what that means is that 43% is done pretty much at the same time and place. And while we're thinking about something else, we're not thinking about what we're doing because we're being guided by the stable cues all around us in our environment. If you want an please go ahead.
No, go ahead with an example.
Yes, my example of the different ways that we understand and use things is, think of the second line of keys on your keyboard. Most of us type pretty proficiently at this point, and I'm sure you can type easily using them. But if I asked you to list those keys, most of us can't do that. We don't have conscious awareness of what the keys are, although we use them all the time. And that's just an example of how our minds are actually composed of slightly separate memory systems that contain different types of information. Habits are what we do. They're something that are called procedural memory, how to do things. Our conscious, thoughtful selves are part of understanding what to do, setting goals, planning, ruminating about the past. All of these things are part of our conscious selves that we're aware of. But they're supported, very importantly, by our habit selves.
And before you said it is about 43% that we do daily in a habitual way. So that still means that
yes. That's
like 57% that we think about the things that we are doing.
Yeah. It that seems to be a pretty stable pattern for most all people. And pretty much any behavior can become habitual if you repeat it often enough. And most behaviors that we do are partly habitual, partly thoughtful, because in my typing example, right, you're actually thinking about what to say, even if you're not thinking about which keys you have to hit in which order they occur on the keyboard. So many of our behaviors are sort of a combination of both, and we don't realize, we're not aware of how much our habit contributes, our habit memories contribute to everyday behavior.
The habitual behavior, that means that you don't think about it when you're doing it.
Yes. Habits are what we say, they're cued automatically, which means, let me first describe how you form a habit. When you're in a situation and you do something to get a reward, your brain ties together where you are, time of day, who you're with, what location you're in, and what you did in order to get that reward. And you can see how that would be really functional, right? Across human history, it's really useful for us to have something in our brain that keeps track of what we do in certain contexts to get a reward, like food, like enjoyment, relaxation, safety, whatever it is that is rewarding. Ultimately, if you repeat a behavior and get a reward often enough, so for modern day people, it would be if you stand in front of your refrigerator and pull out a snack often enough, ultimately, you find yourself just thinking of that refrigerator and opening the door, even if you don't really have an intention to eat anything or you're not hungry. That's what happens when you form a habit. The action automatically comes to mind without you having to make a decision to do so. And this happens to us about 43% of our times during the day.
Say, for example, if I'm checking if this is also a habit or not, good or bad, it really doesn't matter. When you're on your phone and you open up Twitter and then you scroll through the feed until you see something that was worth the time to open up Twitter. So is it the opening of Twitter, is that a habit when you've done it often enough? Because if you don't open it, do you miss it?
Ah, if you have a habit to get on Twitter, then what will happen is when you wake up in the morning, when you're bored, when you go to bed at night, whenever you typically have done that in the past, then opening up Twitter, getting on Twitter, will pop into mind. Even if you're kind of tired or it's sort of rude, because maybe you're at a table eating with other people. It's rude to be looking at your phone. These things come to mind automatically. And because we don't understand how habits work, we tend to assume that we must have wanted to get on Twitter at that time. So you ask if we would miss it if we didn't? Well, if it's our habit, it's what we typically think about, and we notice it if we're not doing it. So yes, it does feel sort of like missing something.
And the reward is just, it's really small, because you are looking for an updated tweet that somehow touches you, or you learn something from. The reward is really tiny.
Yeah, I know. But phones and social media apps were designed specifically with habit in mind. So we tend to learn habits fastest when rewards are what we call intermittent or occasional. And that describes exactly what happens on Twitter and on our phones. When we're excuse me, when we're checking our phone, most of the time what we see is just garbage. It's not of interest. But every once in a while, there's that little nugget of information or a positive response from somebody, a like, a retweet, something that captures our attention and is interesting and makes us feel good. And that's all it takes for us to start forming a Twitter habit and a phone use habit.
Yes, they specifically designed these social media tools that these habits really catch on quickly.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I'm afraid that Silicon Valley knows more about our habits than we do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So for the, I've written a post about how and made a short video about how you could get rid of this really addictive tool, meaning the phone. What is a good way to decrease your time on your phone and social media?
Well, once you realize that it's a habit, you realize that it's going to keep coming to mind automatically. Even if you make a decision, I'm not looking at my phone anymore. that decision does not control your habit memory. And willpower, we all would love to think we have enough willpower to control our habits. But habit memory forms and changes only slowly. So once something actually becomes a habit, it sticks around a long time. It's why once you learn to ride a bike, you don't forget it. Even if you haven't ridden for a couple of years, you still remember how to do that. And that's your habit memory. Most of us don't have enough willpower to outlast our habits. That habit will still keep popping to mind, even after you've gotten tired, and it's just no fun to try to control your behavior that way. So what I suggest in the book is that people put friction on a behavior that they're trying to control. Put friction on a habit. Friction in the physical world is a force that impedes motion, right? It gets in the way of motion. Psychologically, friction is caused by making behaviors more difficult. And I think the best example of friction is anti-smoking campaigns. So in the U.S. at least, almost 50% of people smoked in the 60s and the 70s. And smoking continued to increase even after we learned that it caused cancer, because nicotine is really addictive and smoking is habitual. What did change smoking rates is the government started to tax cigarettes, so it's not so easy to purchase them. That's one kind of friction. They banned smoking in public places so that you can't smoke in the office, in restaurants. It used to be that you could even smoke in airplanes, but can't do that anymore. And they took cigarettes off the shelves. So you can't go into a store and just pick up a pack. You actually have to go ask a store clerk if you want to buy cigarettes. This all put friction on our smoking and made it so that people stopped smoking as often. And now we're down in the US to only about 15% of people who smoke. So that's a tremendous, tremendous shift. And that was caused just by putting friction on behavior. So if you want to put friction on your cell phone use, what you would do is you would not take your phone with you. There are places, you know, where you don't need to have your phone. When you go out to dinner, to a fancy meal, you probably don't need your phone. You also could turn it off so that you're not getting notifications. You're not getting those beeps and notifications that something has happened. One of the studies that I like that illustrates friction is a study that was actually done with cell phones, but it wasn't done with how people use cell phones. It was done tracking people's cell phones to figure out how far they went to a gym, to a paid gymnasium, paid fitness center. They tracked hundreds of thousands of people for 2 months. And what the researchers found was that if people went, 3.5 miles, which is how many kilometers? Around 5 kilometers.
Yeah.
If people went around 5 kilometers to a gym, they actually went 5 times a month on average. So that's more than once a week. That's a pretty good gym habit. If they had to travel 5 miles, which is closer to 10 kilometers, then they only went once a month. So distance is friction. If you have to travel far to get to a gym, you're just not going to go as often as if it's convenient. If you can tie it into other trips, like if it's close by your grocery store or close by your work, then you're much more likely to go to the gym on a regular basis. So friction is not something we think about as being important in controlling our behavior, because we think we're in charge, right? We think if we want to go to the gym, we'll go. But it doesn't quite work that way. Our behavior is very responsive to friction in the environment, and we're likely to repeat into habits things that are easy to do, that are low in friction.
Yeah, so if you want to increase habits that support your goals, then you would reduce friction. And if you want to, minimize the habits that don't support your goals, then you increase friction.
That's exactly it, yes. There have been experiments showing that if people have 2 bowls of food in front of them, one full of apple slices, another full of buttered popcorn, everyone has those 2 bowls of food in front of them. For some people, the popcorn is at a distance. It requires them to reach. They can still see it, but they have to reach to get it, and the apple slices are really close. For others, it's the reverse. The popcorn is really close, and they have to reach for the apple slices. If you have to reach for the popcorn and the apple slices are close, you eat a third less calories than if the popcorn is right in front of you. So how much we consume, how many calories we consume, is also really influenced by friction in our environment in ways that we're not aware of, but is very meaningful in guiding our behavior and the habits that we form.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend this morning, and she was following for like 6 months a low-carb diet. But now, like about a month or so, she's off of the diet because she likes bread and croissants and stuff like that. And she said, I find it really difficult to get back into that diet. And before it was just easy to continue. Why is that happening? Because, like you said before, once you have a habit, it should be very easy to just get back into it, like riding a bike.
Well, I don't know the exact circumstances. I don't know if her eating a low-fat diet was a habit.
Mm.
It could have been something that she was controlling and making herself do, which is actually what it suggests, because she quit after a while because it wasn't that much fun. There's not a whole lot of variety, at least for carbohydrates, that you can get on a diet like that. And there's carbohydrates all around us. Other people are eating them. They're in the store. We get served them in restaurants. Our kids like them. So it may have been that she didn't really have a habit to stick with a low-carb diet. That's very hard to do, sticking with that kind of a diet in the kinds of environments that we live in. Excuse me.
So, in general, that's what it sounds like to me. That's how I would translate it. In general, it's very difficult to stick to a diet in the environment that we are just in the office or in the grocery store. Or it's just very difficult. The environment is so much influenced by all these calories that are all around us.
Yes, and so what you can do if you want to eat a healthy diet is to make food that is healthy easy to access so that you can you
yep.
hear me
yep.
I just got a poor network connection. Okay, great. Make the food easy to access, low friction, so that you can easily form a habit to eat it without thinking. You can go down aisles in the grocery store where there's lots of produce, fruits and vegetables, and make that your habit. So that's just what you do without thinking. Habits are things you do without having to make a decision. And that happens if you've repeated the behavior often enough and find it rewarding.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that you and I haven't talked about here,
yeah.
which is the role of rewards.
Yeah.
So we sometimes think that if we give ourselves rewards for a behavior, like take ourselves out and buy something that we've wanted in the store at the end of the week, or go to a concert, buy ourselves movie tickets, that we can use those as incentives to form habits. But habits don't form with those kinds of rewards. Instead, think of Twitter. So with Twitter, the reward is immediate. It's when you're doing the behavior that you all of a sudden get that message or get that like that makes you feel good. And that's the kind of reward that builds a habit. The reason it works this way is that when we get rewarded, our brain releases a neurotransmitter called dopamine. And we all know dopamine is sort of the feel-good chemical, but it does lots of things. One of the things it does is it ties together what we just did and the context we're in to get that reward. So it's helping us form those habit associations so that the habit is what comes to mind the next time you're in that situation. Because habits are your brain's best guess of what to do in order to get a reward as you did in the past. It's not necessarily the reward you want right now, but it's what you did to get a reward in the past. But that reward has to be immediate. So if you don't like going to the gym and working out, then you're not likely to form a habit to do so, unless you can figure out something to do to make it immediately more fun. It's why people sometimes buy fancy workout clothes, because they can put it on and then feel good. Or it's why you might listen to podcasts or watch TV when you're working out on equipment. All of those things make the experience itself more pleasurable and are more likely to be the kind of reward that builds habits.
Yeah. I have this thing that's also intriguing me with entrepreneurs. When I work with my clients in the coaching, they are entrepreneurs from a small business and working in their business and then slowly moving towards, let's say, 10 people. And they have to start working at their business and less in their business. So they need to stop doing the work that they used to do, working for clients or solving issues for the employees. And I see that it is very difficult for them to change this way of working. Like yesterday, we had a talk and we had a chat with the whole team. And at some point, one of the team members says, well, I have this issue with my computer and the internet and whatever. And then she says, well, then you just have to call them. But just, I think it was 2 minutes later, she was on the phone with the automation company.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You're still here. I thought it was silence because you're not.
I'm sorry. I'm not. Ask the question again.
So in this case, 2 minutes later, she was on the phone with the automation company trying to solve the problem for the employee and not just leaving it to them to solve it themselves, because she's used to this way of working that she solves the issues for employees. And even though they are capable of doing it themselves, how can I help entrepreneurs to change this way of working? And to me, it sounds like a habit.
Yes, it does. It sounds like a habit that developed when they were in a different role. And when you move into a managerial role, you have other responsibilities, but those old behaviors keep coming to mind. And even if you know that your employees can solve these problems, you're used to solving them. So you jump in and do it yourself. Yes, that's a great example of a habit. So there's a couple of things you can do. One is, as we said, you can put friction on the old behavior. So what used to be your go-to responses, make them more difficult. Remove the quick dial, the automated dialing on your phone to the computer tech, to the animation mm-hmm. company, so that it's not as easy for you to just automatically do what you did before. Give yourself a chance to get some distance, put some friction on the old behaviors. And what that will involve will be different for each manager, because what they've practiced in their old job will be different. So that's where someone like you would be very helpful, coming in and helping people think through how they can put friction, make it a little bit more difficult for them to do their old job and instead focus on learning the new one, so that parts of the new job become habits.
And in the book, you write about how long it takes to form a habit, which is 2 months and a week, if I remember correctly. Does this also mean that it requires them to more than 2 months to get rid of this habit?
Oh, there are some people who think that old habit memories never go away, that we never lose them. And so it takes learning another behavior that becomes your new habit. Some people believe that you have to form a competing habit in order to control the old one, or not get yourself in that situation that cues the old habit. So that's another way to change unwanted habits, is not to put yourself in the situation that activates what you used to do. So getting a new office, getting a new phone, having a new support staff, all of that will help you shift your old habits at work so that you're more open to learning new habits.
Yeah.
And there's a chapter on this in the book. It's called Habit Discontinuity, how to change your environment so that the old behaviors aren't cued any longer.
Oh, right. Yes. Change the environment. That was really a magnificent part of the book. Yes. People moving and I remember that part. Yes, it was really amazing. So I remember that story about, I think it was going somewhere, maybe it was going to the gym, and when they moved, they started doing that behavior because now they were in a different environment. So, like you said, you could change the office for the entrepreneur so that the environment changes and you have to do different things.
Exactly. Yes, this is research that I did on students transferring to a new university.
Right.
When they had an exercise habit at their old university, if they didn't have the same facilities at the new university, they lost the habit. And it's only those who were really strongly committed to keep exercising, who found a new place to exercise, a new way to exercise. Everybody else just lost their habit. It's what happens when context change.
Wendy, thank you very much for your time and your insights on this topic. I just want to say to the listener, go buy the book, read the book. It's very helpful. Is there something that you want to add, maybe, Wendy?
Just that I really appreciate talking with you about this, and I hope that people do read the book, and if they have questions, that they contact me, because I'm happy to talk with people about specific instances. You brought up a number of really fascinating examples of the application of habits in people's lives. And it's interesting for me to hear these and to hear how you use them in your work. So thank you very much, Erna.
Thank you, Wendy. What's the best way for people to contact you?
You could just Google me.
Yeah.
You can get my email off of my university website.
Okay,
I'm at the University of Southern California.
Yeah, I'll put all that in the show notes and people can read that. Wendy, thank you very much once again, and I hope to speak to you in the future.
Yes, this was really fun. Thank you.
Dat was het gave gesprek met Wendy. Je vindt de namen en links die we noemden in het artikel dat bij deze uitzending hoort. Ga daarvoor naar ernohanning.nl/show235 op zoek op mijn website naar Wendy Wood. Wil je vanzelf automatisch de volgende aflevering van deze podcast op je telefoon krijgen? Dat kan heel eenvoudig. Stel je hebt een Apple-telefoon, een iPhone, dan zit daar standaard Apple Podcast op. Klik op die app, open het. Klik op het vergrootglas en zoek op de Ernohanning Show. En dan klik je op abonneer vanzelf. Heb je een Android-telefoon, ook simpel, installeer dan eerst een Player FM-app, dat is een podcast-app. mijn favorieten. Zoek de Anne Honning Show op en klik op abonneer. Dankjewel alvast. Heb je vragen, opmerkingen, reacties over deze aflevering met Wendy of over de podcast in het algemeen? Stuur dan een e-mail naar podcast@ernhonning.nl. Ik weet dan dat het over de podcast gaat. Ik hoor supergraag van jou. Leer hoe je meer rust krijgt terwijl je er geen tijd voor hebt. Hoe je het netto resultaat van je bedrijf verhoogt zonder harder te werken. Wil jij weten hoe je focus krijgt op het allerbelangrijkste wat je te doen hebt, zodat je weer gaat ontnemen? Vraag dan het gratis boek Betere Beslissingen, Meer Focus voor de Ondernemer aan op ernhonning.nl. Dit is mijn nieuwste boek en je downloadt het helemaal gratis. Je hebt er zelfs geen e-mailadres voor nodig. De fysieke versie van het boek is ook gratis, dan betaal je alleen de verzendkosten. Vraag jouw boek nu aan op ernhonning.nl. En ik weet, je bent druk, je leest het in één avond tijd. Dankjewel en graag tot de volgende.
Dankjewel voor het luisteren naar de Erno Hanning Show op ernohanning.nl.